Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to part two of Walking the Dog with Al Murray. If you haven't yet caught part one, do go back and give it a listen, as this man is hilarious and fascinating, and I think you'll love it. I really hope you enjoy the second part of our chat, and don't forget to subscribe. Here's Al and Ray Ray.
Alistair James Hay Murray.
Yes.
Great name.
Well, the Hay is like all the men going all the way back, first sons and all that sort of thing. Of course, having had daughters, I've trodden on that a little.
Oh, wow. So, which bridge is that?
That's Hammersmith Bridge.
It's very pretty, isn't it?
As you can see, there's no traffic going over it, but massive bone of contention locally, that.
I've seen Jeremy Vine.
Yeah. I see him on his penny farthing.
Penny farthing.
Tooling around Chiswick. It's really funny.
So, we were talking about the pub landlord and how you're essentially responsible for Brexit. Which I'm glad you've admitted to.
Well, you know, someone has to hold up their hand and say, yeah, it was me, actually. Credit where credit's due.
What do you think Nigel Farage thinks of you?
Oh, I think he probably thinks I'm another one of the London liberal, lefty media, Islington establishment. When I ran for Parliament, it's a long time ago now, in 2015, someone did pop up saying, you know, I wish these Islington, liberal Islington BBC people would butt out. And you sort of think, well, A, I live in Chiswick, and B, the extent of my work with the BBC has been as a freelancer. I am not on the staff. You know, like, please, if you're going to come at me, put some effort in, do your research. I wonder what he thinks of me. I think he probably thinks it was, in the end, it was all part of the rough and tumble, and he got what he wanted anyway. He got Brexit, so it's not like I stopped him or anything.
But I wonder, it was interesting, that whole character, that I feel it demonstrated an awareness, even though it was satire.
Yeah.
Satire is always based on truth, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know that memento mori thing they always have in paintings, I'm fascinated by, where there's like a skull.
Oh yeah. I love those pictures.
Like, and it's essentially, remember you're going to die.
Yeah. It's got some books and some wealth and a bubble of knowledge and all that sort of thing.
A bubble burster.
Yeah.
But I sort of see the pub landlord as kind of, he was this reminder always there, like a memento mori saying, don't ignore.
Well, I do remember there was a period where I'd get these reviews going, he's still going, you know, it's all out of date, he's still going about Europe. This is probably about in the mid 2000s, and I remember reading them thinking, the idea that this has gone away, the idea that this skepticism about Europe has gone away is completely bananas, and the complacency around that question, which is after all why in the end the Remain campaign was so, they were so complacent, they thought they'd won the argument, so they never made it, you know, and so on. And I always used to think, what do you mean that I'm still banging on about it? Of course I'm still banging on, because people still think about this an awful lot, and it's lurking and it's there.
I want to get on to the respected historian side of Al Murray. You obviously a co-host of a hugely successful podcast.
Yes. We have Ways of Making You Talk, the Second World War podcast for all your Second World War podcast needs, should you have any.
And this is with, I recently had Tom Holland on
this
podcast.
Yes, with his brother James, yeah.
Yeah.
James Holland, yeah.
And so I can exclusively reveal, because Tom told me this, that James was in trouble more often, and Tom was a bit more Machiavellian.
Well, none of that surprises me. If you'd said anything else, I'd have gone, I'm not sure about that. Jim's the cavalier and Tom is the roundhead. I think that's the way that cookie crumbled, particularly in that family. I mean, James is such a, we're really great friends, and he is such a brilliant historian. He's so.
So are you.
I sit at his knee and take the crumbs from his table. He's so amazing. His work rate. I mean, they're both phenomenally hard workers. But he's on the second volume of a history of the phase of the war where the Allies get to Rome, from September 1943 to June 1944. And he's written it. He's broken it into two volumes.
Can I just say congratulations? It's been a good 40 minutes, and you've not even mentioned 1944, 1939.
We've just got there. We've just got there.
Pull up a chair.
I think it's been very, very restrained of me. But so he's writing this book, but he's also in the same time written a novel as well, because he really loves writing fiction too. And he's just his sort of fluidity with the material. It's just absolutely amazing. An amazing thing to have experienced, to be his sort of wingman. It's just it's been brilliant.
I really like your podcast.
Thank you.
But I think there is a chemistry which the rest of History Boys have as well.
Yeah.
I think you and James have it.
I think that's why people listen. Because what we used to do before we did the podcast, if he was in town, he'd say, can we have lunch? I want to talk about Normandy or whatever.
Can someone... I just say, I'm out. If you rung me out and said, can we have lunch? I want to talk about Normandy. I would say, I'm really sorry, Al.
But the thing is, it's not unlike my dad and I, that would be stuff we'd talk about, right? Which is how I got interested in the subject in the first place, because it's my father's passion. That's where it all comes from.
Is that your bonding thing with your dad?
Yeah. And the book I'm writing at the moment is entirely because of him. Entirely because, you know, he took me to see A Bridge Too Far when I was 8, and then we went to Arnhem in Holland, which is where I'm writing about, when I was 15, because I did an O-level history project and went to Kew, got the war diaries out and read them and all this sort of stuff. And so he took me there. And so it's all because of him. But it's the fact that it is like sitting in and listening to us talking with a couple of pints in front of us and talking about stuff. And I'm coming at it from a, like, I don't know about this. I want to learn more. I want to find out more. Really? You're joking. How do you place that in the context of something else? And Jim's coming at it. You know, he's read everything. He knows everything. He knows every last... beat of it. It's extraordinary, and I think it's the friendship and the fact we have a laugh when we're talking about the subject, which I think some people might not believe would be possible talking about the Second World War. But I think, you know, it's not unlike Tom and Dominic, you know, on The Rest Is History. It's that they plainly really enjoy each other's company, if nothing else.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, here's a question. Why do men love war?
Oh, that is an excellent question. I think that there are so many things tied up in it. I think the core thing is it's incredibly dramatic. Whether you think it's exciting or not, the drama of it all, I think, is what it's about. Not the glamour. I think there is a idea of glamour around war and the question of war. I think one of the other reasons is on the face of it, it's a thing men have always had to do, is fight. And one way or another, it's the, and obviously it's changing, and it's brilliant that it's changing, that women now get the opportunity to kill each other.
Thanks for that.
Well, you see, this is the thing, it's because I wrote about a bit about that in the book, about how during the war the British Army ran out of officers, so it couldn't rely on public schools anymore, so it had to democratise the process. So finally, working class, and if you're an officer, the reason they're running out of officers is because it's much more dangerous and you're more likely to be killed. So, you know, finally the working class lads of England got the chance to be killed at the same rate as posh people. You know, hooray!
Equality!
Exactly. Be careful what you wish for, you know.
Do you think also, I wonder if, you know, Tom Holland talks about the obsession with the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
And I think the interest that people have in the Roman Empire, we were sort of saying, I should say he was saying, is largely to do with that sense of it's bloodthirsty and exciting, but and it, all those things, but safely at a distance.
Yeah.
And do you think that's true with the interest in the war?
I think.
Specifically World War II.
Well, I think no. I think it's actually for me, it's the opposite. It's that it only really happened moments ago. And it's, you know, my parents are in their mid to late 80s. They grew up during it. We're in direct tactile contact with it as an event. And also, I mean, you know, in this country, certainly, in modern Britain, is birthed by the Second World War. The modern political polity we have with the welfare state and the National Health Service is birthed by the war. The idea of the relationship citizens have with the state and all that, they all spring from it. So it's, and certainly if you look at the Russian attitude to the Great Patriotic War, as they call it, and their interpretation of it, it's still a live event. It's not like the Roman Empire where you go, oh gosh, they fed Christians to lions. That would never happen today, but isn't that thrillingly interesting? It's the opposite. It's that it's still alive. You know, you only have to look at the way politics around questions in the Middle East is being played out, that's refracted through questions about the Holocaust. You know.
Do you know what, Al? You know, I've met a lot of people that have done subjects at degree level, some of them Oxford and Cambridge.
Yeah.
But very often all that stuff gets filed away and it sits there.
Yeah.
And they'd sort of struggle to answer a question on the wheel about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just get the sense you've always been passionate about this subject.
Yeah.
And you sound like an academic when you're talking about it.
Well, I hope not. Because the thing is when I did do academic history, it nearly killed it for me. Like at uni, I wasn't interested anymore because they weren't interested in the human drama of it, or the fact conflict, war was extremely unfashionable in academia. 35 years ago when I went to university. It still kind of is, really. It's a dirty word. And there are some historians who are trying to, and they're basically historians on the left, who are trying to turn it around and go, actually, we need to understand it. We need to look at what it means and how it works, and what it even is. I have had periods of my life, though, where I've tried to put it aside and not be interested in it, you know. So we live in an amazing world. Why am I obsessed with 6 years of history? I should be interested in other things. I should look at other times. I should play music. You know, like I've done that. There's probably a 10-year period where I tried to say, all right, I've read all the books about Normandy I'll ever read. And then...
It's not how it works with passions, though, is
no,
it?
No. I got drawn back in, which is cool, because it's because the podcast has been the most amazingly rewarding experience. You know, we have a festival. We have a festival in July.
Warfest.
We have Ways Fest. Nicknamed Warfest. It's a safe space for people who are interested in the subject, where they're not going to get the piss taken, and they're not going to get...
It's like Dungeons and Dragons.
I mean, to an extent, it's like Dungeons and Dragons, but, you know.
So, Al Murray,
this
is a very lovely time for you in your life. I'm telling you that. Because... You are a grandfather.
Yes, I am, yeah. My eldest daughter, Scarlett, she's 4-year-old daughter, and it's really brilliant. It's been amazing. It was also I didn't think it would be. I thought disaster was unfolding. She'd been derailed from her uni career and all this. But actually, it's been brilliant. It's lovely. It's only lovely. And I was very, very sceptical. And I was like, well, I'm going to end up paying for all this. And none of that's happened. And it's just been the most fantastic positive experience. It's been incredible. I mean, and also there's that wonderful thing that you're, as a grandparent, you go, all right, not my problem anymore. Bye. Kicking off now, is she? Well, I think it's probably time for you to go home.
I think that says a lot for you as a parent, actually. Because that's quite a bold choice. Yeah. When you're at university or whatever, she will, and to suddenly say, no, I'm going to go ahead with this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was.
You've given her... that says to me that she has a lot of agency over her own life.
Yeah, well, no, she does. And Scarlett has a very mild form of cerebral palsy, like a hemiplegia, as a disability. Mm. She's written about it and done some advocacy about it and stuff. And so she's had extra to deal with as a young mum. But I mean, I suppose as a parent, the thing you really hope for in your kids is that they can cope with what the world throws at them. That's the sort of thing you really can hope for. And she can. It's been an amazing display of her resilience and her strength of character and everything. And you know, it's been nice to have been proved wrong. And that with me is like, that's like the ultimate blood from the stone, is me to go, you know what, I was wrong about that. I mean, that she's achieved that is extraordinary in itself.
Well, so maybe you're learning from your parents' light touch.
Well, possibly. I mean, Scarlett might have a different view. Dad was really down on me to start with, but you know, who's that? That's Capability Brown.
Gardener.
Father of the English landscape garden. 1716 to 1783.
Do you think Titchmarsh will have that one day? You know, father of the English landscape garden.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, Capability Brown did great PR for himself because he was a gardener,
yeah,
a brilliant gardener.
Yeah.
But he's rebranded himself as father of the English landscape.
I mean, Capability, if you, that's the nickname you want. I mean, you know, here comes, he's going to do a good job, he's capable.
It's like Marvin Marvellous Hagler.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to talk as well about the fact that not only have you become a grandfather, Al Murray, you've become a dad again. You have two adult daughters, one of whom has a child, and you recently...
Well, yeah, I mean, she's six now, she's in year one, so, which is great. My youngest is an auntie, is the other great thing, with a niece who's 2 years younger than her, which is just like, it's all, to be honest, it's all been absolutely brilliant, all of that. It's been fantastic. And the, you know, it makes you feel young again. It also makes you feel incredibly old, because I don't have the gas in the tank I had 25 years ago when Scarlett first arrived.
Do you think your daughters have been helpful to you in terms of your understanding of women and...
Well, no, I don't understand them, so I can't apply any broad brush lessons to the half the planet. I often think when men go, wow, women like that, what they actually mean is one woman in particular. They don't mean women, they mean, oh, that... Her, she's doing my head in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I don't. I just don't know.
It's that thing my sister used to call it. Is she mad or is she mad mate?
Oh, right,
because the
good
idea that in that there's some, you know, some people are, do have mental health issues, yeah, but mad mate was in the pub. Mad mate turned my phone off all night and disappeared for three days.
Yeah,
went,
yeah, yeah.
Mad mate.
Yeah, mad mate. There we are. Yeah, yeah.
But. Do you see yourself as a feminist, Al?
Oh, I suppose I am, having not read any of the texts. You know, I couldn't sit down with Andrea Dworkin and or Susan Sontag or Camille Paglia and you know, I couldn't go any rounds with any of them. But no, I suppose so. I mean, But it's having grown, because the two of them are the big ones, they're grown up now. Having grown up daughters, you see a load of stuff that you you know, how tough it is for teenage girls growing up in the world right now. I'm so glad we're out of that. Because that was, you know, 7-8 years ago we'd be having this conversation. I'd be preoccupied with the problems my daughters are having to deal with in the world that young women have to deal with, you know.
Things like, what you mean, the sort of pressures there?
Pressures on body and image and also, what are they going to do with themselves? You know, what are they going to do with themselves? Are they going to be mums? Are they going to, you know, and how compatible that can that be with anything else? And, you know, and all, and it strikes me it's a bit simpler for boys.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You've got war.
Yeah, we got war. We can dress up in uniforms, try and kill each other, and then everything's all right, isn't it?
I feel you've got quite a lot of serotonin. Naturally. Frank Skinner, who you obviously know well and started out with.
Yes, yeah, I did his support.
He was told by his partner, Kath, that he has a lot of natural serotonin. And she worked this out when she saw that he was watching sausages cook and was so excited he was doing a dance on his own at the prospect of the sizzling sausages.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I suspect you were.
Yeah, I do like a sausage. Especially when they're sizzling.
But that's what I mean. I suspect you're a don't sweat the small stuff.
I try not to. Although that can be thrown back at me as, you're not paying any attention to any of the detail of how our lives run. You know what I mean? That can come back at you the other way. But I try not to. I try to go, it'll be all right. You know, this'll pass. I'm a great believer in things passing. Moments pass. The bad times fade away, you know.
Are you a good person to go to for advice?
I don't know. I don't know. I would, that sounds a bit responsible. as long as you don't act on it. Does that make sense?
But I know you don't like confrontation. We've discussed this.
No fan of that.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're kind of, confrontation and responsibility are quite close cousins, I think.
Yes.
You know, they're both heavy, aren't they?
But when you look at your kids, what quality of yours would you most want them to have?
I would like, if I do have that ability to not sweat the small stuff, that's the one I want them to have.
So that's resilience.
Yeah, I think it probably is, yeah. Doing stand-up, you have to have there has to be part of you that's quite resilient anyway.
Do you ever take it personally? If you do a bad gig, I mean,
of course, you always take it personally. It's personal. It's personal. They don't like your jokes. How could it not be personal? But that's all part of the sort of, you know, carapace of resilience that you end up building up, I think. And anyway, it's like the thing of driving around the M25. The reward of it going well is worth it. It's worth developing those sort of defences.
Well, no one likes preparing stand-up. Everyone likes having done it.
But it's like what Jane said about writing. Yeah.
Al, I need to compliment you.
Oh, yeah.
Before we go. Would you like that?
So, always.
I really loved the recent history book you wrote.
Command. How the Allies Learned to Win the Second World War.
Thank you. You're not on the one show now.
No, we're not, no.
What I loved about your book is that, and I feel this is because you're a comic and you're a natural communicator.
Yeah.
So I was in.
Right.
I felt very engaged.
Oh, that's good.
All this really interesting thing, for example, you're talking about Montgomery.
Yeah.
And you make this brilliant observation. The way you sum up his autobiography or his memoir is you say, it's written with the kind of energy of, I was right all along, despite being surrounded by fools.
It's an amazing book for that. Yeah, yeah. And it's also, if you read it as a historian, you're meant to read his memoir and go, well, you know, I can't possibly rely on this book. But if you want a character reference for him, it's fantastic.
But it was such a brilliantly written book, and I wanted to congratulate you.
Thank you very much.
What kind of dog is that? It's a what? Oh, it's a dachshund. Oh, wire hair dachshund. Do you know?
That's proper size.
Proper size.
Everyone buys the little ones.
Well, we saw some dinky ones earlier.
His dad actually won Crofts for the breed years ago.
Unbelievable.
His dad's name was Boomer.
Oh, he's got a little puppy as well. What's this dog called?
This is Sizzles. Sizzles the sausage.
Sizzles the sausage, yeah. Sizzling sausages.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you, yeah.
Anyway, I think you've written a really brilliant book.
Oh, thank you.
And I think you should be proud of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How do you feel about compliments?
Oh, I like them and I file them and I say thank you. I'm always amazed by them. I'm always surprised, faintly surprised when I'm complimented, but I really like them. They're good for you, aren't they? If you can take them, they're good for you. They're good for the soul.
Some people struggle with it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I know a lot of people, some performers, in fact, and they will say, I really don't feel comfortable with you saying this to me.
Yeah. Performers know the exact compliment they want to be paid, and if you don't pay them the exact compliment they want to be paid, then you've got it wrong. I mean, maybe sometimes I've done that where someone will go, I really enjoyed that show. I like the way you did this, that and the other thing. No, sorry. The good bit about this show is the other thing. And there's that kind of conflict in it, I think.
One thing you should never say is, God, that must be so tiring.
Yeah.
Or never say, how do you think it went?
No, never say that, no. Because the answer will be terrible.
Yeah.
And also you've got them thinking that now.
And never don't say anything.
Well, I was told the thing to say when you go to something that you don't think is any good is to, go to your friend and go, you've done it again. You have done it again. That's the thing. That's the thing you're meant to say if you think a thing stinks, apparently.
Imagine if Al Murray said this to me at the end of the interview. Emily, you've done it again.
You've done it again, Emily. Yeah. But the thing is, the problem with that is once everyone knows that, you can't do it anymore, can you?
Do you know how I know you're relaxed, Al?
Why?
I judge it by this. I knew if I'd have turned up today, and let's say I'd been 10 minutes late.
Yeah.
I know you'd have been absolutely unstressed about it. Yeah. Do things like that not bother you?
No, not really. No, because also it's the reciprocity of it. You might be late.
Yeah.
I might be late. You know, if I'm not going to get, it's like shooting the other side's prisoners in wartime. you don't shoot them, they won't shoot you when they capture you. It's like that. I don't think that's ever been applied to the question of punctuality before, the idea of reciprocity in taking prisoners of war. But there you go. That's what my podcast has done to me.
Al's war references.
Oh, that's very funny.
Do you know what? Next time, we won't take the dog out. We're going to sit at home and play Cold Hits.
Right.
It's probably been cancelled now, hasn't
it? No, you can still get it. It's been reissued.
But I know I've got it. Someone bought it for me from eBay.
It doesn't have the swastikas on it. Yeah, they took the swastikas off.
Al, your podcast is brilliant. And I suggest, if you haven't listened to it, please go out and listen to it immediately. It's called We Have Ways.
Yeah.
And please buy Al's book.
Yes, do buy my book. And my next book, which is called Black Tuesday. It's the next book.
Yeah, but you've got to write that, haven't you?
It's like, you know when you're going up a mountain, up a hill, and you think, I'm at the top now, and you're, oh no, balls, I've got another bit to do. So it's like that. I'm in the closing stages of this book right now.
He's not selling it, but it is going to be brilliant.
It's going to be brilliant.
He's a fantastic. Yeah. Al, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Did you enjoy our walk?
I did, enormously. It was very nice to see Ray, the Dalai Lama of dogs. The doggy llama. Bye bye.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of Walking the Dog. We'd love it if you subscribed and do join us next time on Walking the Dog, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.